You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Hello, everybody. It's Federica and Stella on the show, So Did You Hear.
Hi, everyone.
Yeah, it's here. My mic's all on. All right. Awesome. Thank you for joining us today. We are broadcasting live from the studio this beautiful Friday afternoon. And we actually have an additional guest on the air with us today. They reached out just yesterday. I love it when guests kind of reach out last minute. And, you know, we had a kind of a regular show plan today, but we actually we have something special for you to to kick off the month of May. So May is my favorite. I think it's my favorite month of the year.
I agree.
First and foremost. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, it's the beginning of some, well, peak spring, early summer. There's just like a different energy in the air, and it like really feels uplifting. It's always a good time of year. Stella, it's like getting to be the end of the semester.
Yeah.
For you. I remember when I was in school, I always like, this is like the time of year I would just be like on a high. I'm just like, oh yeah, the school year's almost over. It's warm outside.
Tired, but yeah.
Tired too.
Yeah.
So yeah, May's it's an exciting month of the year, I think. Mm-hmm. And of course, May is also Asian American Heritage Month, and it works out perfectly with our show today because we have Ryan, who is the executive director of Asians for Collective Liberation Spokane, joining us on the air. And Ryan is going to talk to us a little bit about the organization and, you know, what your organization does, what their impact is in the community, and you've got some pretty cool events coming up. So, yeah, Ryan, we'll hand it over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Federica and Stella, for having us on last minute. I, too, was also included in this last minute, but that's always how Heritage Month and big fun activities go, and so I'm totally happy to be here and share about our organization. And so our organization's mission is to center the power of Asians and Asian Americans to build a healthy, just, and thriving community for all. Our vision is that we will create a world of collective liberation where Asians and Asian Americans can live in a community of well-being, safety, and belonging. And we value joy and celebrating ourselves, which we're doing this month, belonging, which are some of the things we're trying to bring people into this month, and honoring our complexity and accountability to our community. And so I think I'll touch really quickly on this honoring complexity point because we, as our organization, in collaboration and solidarity with a couple of different Asian and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander community groups, are working on the movement of disaggregation. And so historically, the month of May has been nationally and federally recognized by, or as Asian American Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Heritage Month, or AANHPI for short. And that's the name that I had originally learned about our movement and our organization as, but throughout the height of COVID and through the information of the Pacifica, or what are they called? Pacific Islander Community Association of Washington, PICA, they introduced to us this idea of disaggregation. And this has a lot to do not only with data and like health data and how in a lot of those numbers or statistics, you'll see Asian NHPI jumbled together. A lot of data in Spokane actually was white and non-white historically. And so we know that's just, it doesn't paint a very accurate picture at all about the non-white community. And then when we break it down into Asian and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander, that acronym and that jumbling together was just a total misnomer. It just arises out of racism and like lack of education and just having an easy name to jumble everyone together. And so we've been focusing on not it's separating, but in a way that is empowering. Mm-hmm. And there's a long history of within the Asian community of imperialism and colonization and war within the Asian community that has also gone into the Pacific Islands. The Pacific Islander community has also experienced imperialism by European countries. And I mean, European countries have brought wars to the entire world. But when we think of the context of this history, like Asians and NHPI are totally different in those historical aspects, in the ways that we've experienced anti-Asian hate or the health disparities, not only through COVID, but through police brutality and other just environmental health factors. And so what is really important for us as our organization is to focus on the Asian community, not just because of the data and trying to separate that. That's really important in making sure we all have the resources that we need. But also the Asian community has two of the largest populations in the world, the Indian population and the Chinese population. And like those, there's so much difference in the Asian community in itself that even Asian alone as an umbrella is like a really hard just community to serve. It's very honoring to be able to do that. And I also can't say at all that I speak for all the Asian community. This is our perspective. This is our movement. We would love for people to learn and participate and be a part of it. And when we talk about collective liberation, we understand that our liberation is tied together, that we all have to uplift each other's work and work in solidarity. And so all that's to say is we are disaggregating, but we're still in solidarity with all the communities that we know we need to uplift.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really great breakdown. I'm so glad you kind of started off with that. Because, you know, I was kind of going to start off with the question of, like, how do you define the Asian community for the exact reasons you just said? And I often thought that the way we kind of, culturally, historically lump Asian cultures together is... it's you're throwing in dozens of different cultures and ethnicities into one lump. And how do you define what Asian culture even is? I'm thinking, here's maybe kind of a stupid example, but like when restaurants that are labeled like, you know, Asian cuisine, like what is Asian mm-hmm. cuisine? That's like, how many different types of cuisine does that include? It's like, are you talking about Indian? Are you talking about Southeast Asian cultures like Thailand, Vietnam, you know, mm-hmm. you're talking about Korean food, you ate like Chinese, Japanese, like, but what are you talking about? And, you know, I guess my mind always goes to like food for some reason. But
what is like the most visible Asian, not characteristic, but that's what is visibly Asian to American society is food and culture. And that has been, that's a very limited view of what the Asian community is. And not saying that's mm-hmm. you, that's just what America has framed Asian people to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the presentation of Asian culture that is most kind of neatly packaged and marketed to mainstream, like, you know, white, mostly white American society. Mm-hmm. We really are really, most of our interaction, I guess I'm speaking for like, you know, somebody, a white girl who grew up in a very white, you know, culture, both in Colorado, Spokane, et cetera. Like that was my main exposure to Asian culture, was like Chinese restaurants, Japanese restaurants, sometimes Korean. But yeah, that's it. So, mm-hmm. I think you mention visibility? You did mention visibility, and I think, you know, I'd be really curious to hear if your organization is also, approaching that, the idea of like, how is Asian culture or how are Asian cultures represented in mainstream society? You know, what are the issues around that, and how would you in your vision kind of see a better way forward to so that we can have a more accurate view of what Asian cultures, you can't say, you know, again, it's not one singular culture, mm-hmm. yeah, to paint a more accurate and more wholesome, fuller picture of the cultures of the Asian continent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, our celebration of Asian American Heritage Month. We have a bunch of events throughout this month. At the Spokane Downtown Library, we have an art exhibit that are some art pieces and stories of our community members. Looked like when I was walking through there, there's like anywhere from 5 year olds to five and up. So we have a wide range of different stories and pieces of art in there, as well as a more detailed exhibit about the historic Chinatown that used to be in Spokane. And so this aligns with the Expo 50th year anniversary, and we're calling it Expo Revival: Searching for Trent Alley. And I think these two stories come together in a very appropriate way in showing what this history of erasure and what Asian culture or populations have been experiencing as far as continuous displacement or being redlined into living in a certain community, which are Chinatowns are generally a result of redlining, which is, I don't know the pure definition, but it's about putting minorities in specific places like to live in the community. So we're showing an exhibit about that to bring to light that there could have been a different community here in downtown Spokane, and that there is a community of Asian people in Spokane currently that don't follow the traditional narrative or what the white gaze would typically see as like the food and culture. And we do that a lot through art and storytelling. And we do tell our story in the ways we want them to be told. And I think that's really important for us in speaking to our experiences as Asians and Asian Americans who've either grown up here in the States or have immigrated here and have had to assimilate or have grown up in an assimilated culture where we don't necessarily, like, I don't speak Chinese and I'm Chinese. I don't wear the traditional clothing, even though I've been trying to find pieces here and there because it's cool. And I think the ways that I connect with my culture are different than what is generally portrayed in just mainstream kind of public eye. And that's not to say that isn't inaccurate. It's definitely a really important piece to, at least for me, thinking like, where do I feel is important to reconnect with my Chinese culture? And sometimes it is in tradition or through music or through learning about religion and stories. But it's really like language and being able to communicate with my elders and to know their history and like what makes them human. And I think a lot of our stories are really trying to break down that model minority myth where there's an expectation that Asian people are either very successful as doctors, scientists, lawyers, whatever. But then there's a whole spectrum of folks and lived experiences, and there is a very large, uneducated, impoverished, they lack citizenship, like access to licensing and gaining citizenship and just having those opportunities. And within that is not just the food and culture. Every person has their own ways of thinking. Think about how you live your life. Everyone is a person just like you, and we don't always get to express and be shown in that light. And so that's a lot of the things that we're trying to do with our work.
That's wonderful. You know, I'm kind of glad you brought up the idea of kind of breaking with norms or the stereotypical views of what quote-unquote Asian cultures are presented as in the white gaze, and that there's a lot of generalizations and the idea of the model minorities of Asian communities being portrayed as either being very, like, I think if I were to kind of put it in a really kind of broken down way, is like being either really highly successful, but also being just like this idea of like silence and being very like rule following straight edge sort of personas. This culture of like putting their heads, people, you know, we put your head down and do well and succeed. And yeah, I definitely hear I've been well familiar with that narrative. But so can you give me like a specific example of like any other, like what are these stereotypes, you know, that are floating around that are just, you know, causing issues? And how are you, what are some ways that you are finding ways to communicate with your culture? I know you mentioned language. What are some other ways that, you know, you find have been helpful for you in communicating or connecting with your culture that don't fit these stereotypes?
Yeah, that's a really big question in my mind. I guess one of the things that we're really focusing on in our mental health or our health and wellness program is mental health. I think that is a very highly stigmatized concept in the Asian community in general. Just, I mean, for various reasons, I think there's a long history of not having space or resources to be able to process these things that are going in our minds, especially if I'm thinking about my immigrant grandparents that came from China to the U.S. and started having to work and don't speak English very well, and they had four daughters, and they're just trying to survive and to not make waves. And that's partly because their language barrier, and people really shun whether you can speak well or not. And it's incredible because my grandparents speak Mandarin, or they speak Cantonese, which there's two dialects. There's probably more, but those are the main Chinese dialects. And they're speaking English. They can speak multiple languages. And they're being shamed for not speaking English perfectly. And that happens a lot in so many spaces. And so that's where part of that silence comes in, is just not wanting to be noticed and be shamed and not be heard, because then people will, you know, they'll make fun of you, or they'll just be like, I don't know what you're saying, or whatever. So there's part of, I think, that impact of, like, one, not being able to express yourself has a huge part on how you deal with your mental health. And then two, there just weren't as many resources. And then we had a whole different lifestyle. They came out of the Great Depression. Everything was different back then. And I think right now we're having more space and access and visibility that mental health is a huge thing, and that we know Asians are the least likely to access mental health. And not only is that because of stigma, but it's because of in Spokane there's a lack of representation of or lack of access to therapists that are Asian. And a lot of the things that we might want to talk about have to do with our race. And when you don't have someone that can relate in that way, it's like not, it doesn't seem super helpful. Right.
Yeah.
And so, absolutely. And so we are trying to, or we are creating spaces that are very intentional about us being able to show up as ourselves and to express ourselves, whether it's through art or through stories, again, and just like and being together and seeing people that look like us or that think like us. And so we know across public schools and universities that, well, I think the Spokane population is like 15,000, and so that's around 2%. So it's really small. And you'll
of
see
the,
them
of the Spokane population. That's 2% of the whole
Spokane County.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and that could. That's definitely an understatement because we know that not everyone fills out the census. Data is always underreported in that way. But anyway, when we have our events, we're intentionally creating spaces for the Asian community, and we're seeing a lot of Asian people in a very intentional space and in an intentional way. And people have been giving us really good feedback on how exciting it is to be around so many Asian people and to be seen and to not have to explain themselves or to just, you know, come as they are. And that helps immensely, not just as an Asian person, but as a queer person, as anyone with different identities, that you can just be yourself in your whatever state you are. If you're having a good day, if you're not having a good day, like, we're here for that. And we know that everyone's going through something. And so I've been, yeah, my staff and our team are just so focused and gracious on like how we all show up for each other. And I'm just so thankful for all of their work and for their space and patience and grace in, moving our work forward and working together and figuring this out. Like, how does collective liberation show up in our work over the past like 3 years? Cause we were volunteer led up until the height of COVID. And then we started doing COVID vaccine clinics, addressing anti-Asian racism, doing community work, doing the storytelling. And now we're doing mental health. And we're also continuing to do civic engagement work.
Mm, okay. What kind of civic engagement work?
So as a 501c3 nonprofit, we have to maintain a nonpartisan stance. And I'm saying it like that as some sort of joke. No, we do that. it's really what we're focusing on, I think, is elevating our voice and our work to touch on the collective liberation piece of like one of the things we advocate for is language access. And language access in the Asian community spans a lot of different dialects and languages, but it also is impactful of the Latine community or any other non-English speaking community that needs access to resources. Mm. And so those are like, that's one example of how we embody collective liberation is like, even though like we're centering the Asian community in this work, it is spreading out through all the different different cultures and statuses of people that also need access to healthcare and education and are living on a burning planet. And so a lot of what we're trying to focus on is voter engagement, because we know that BIPOC and young voters are the least likely to vote historically in any election, but they're the largest voting bloc. If we can double or triple or get every young voter to show up and vote with their values and think about your values, do you care about people and the planet? Do you care about money and housing? Do you care about food and language or healthcare? Or like, where are the places and the people that you experience and like, the places where you feel injustice and see injustice? And I know there's probably a lot of voter apathy of like, at least for the presidential election, let's not get too far into it. But I think there's a big wake up call of like how our government is or isn't serving us. And we're existing in this system that we do have to participate in order to change it. And so it's not a matter of not voting to be like, I don't want either of these people to win. It's a matter of voting for the person that will make sure that our world doesn't get worse.
Yeah.
It will have to maintain it until we can all continue to show up and build power and speak up through voting and through testifying in city council and through protesting and through writing letters to your legislators. Like, there's a whole list of ways that people can and should be involved in the ways that are in politics, that politics work, because politics, whether people say they're political or not, runs our world, and it has a direct impact on the ways we show up. And what the powers that be want is for people not to be political, because they know when we do become political and speak up, that we do have power.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested in seeing what it would look like if we got the young and the BIPOC voters to show up, because we've never seen elections where we've had control over that narrative. And so I'm not telling anyone who to vote for. I'm telling them to think about how they can make an impact with their vote. And I would love to see how that can happen as an experiment. Well, let's just say as an experiment. What happens if every single young and BIPOC voter votes? Let's just see.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is like such a good thing to touch upon, no matter like what this, the topic of conversation, what ethnicity, what group you're representing, et cetera. Like apathy, like voter apathy in today's climate. I get where it comes from. Like, look, we're all tired, overwhelmed, like just burnt out on the drama. I get it. And it's really easy to want to just check out and be like, I don't like any of these options. I'm just going to like unplug, dissociate, not partake. And like, I get the impulse, but that kind of like response in today's climate is super dangerous, because that just means that the more radical, you know, voters and people out there who have real, who are really, really dedicated to their narratives and sometimes dangerous narratives are going to show up, and they take the power. Like you're giving your power away. You have power, and you're like, by not voting, you're just giving power away to people who can make things worse. So it's, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, for sure. And we could keep talking about voting too. I think the one point I do want to make is that people, non-white male people, have been trying to get access to voting for a long time, because those were historically who could vote, were the white males, right? Since the Constitution.
Since the beginning, I'm
getting too deep into it, but people have worked very hard for us to vote. And the easiest thing that we can do is that it shows up in the mailbox in Washington State. We're a mail-in voting state. So it shows up in your mailbox. You check off you vote up and down the ballot, not just for the president. You vote for our governor and the legislators, because those people have direct impacts on our state policy, and they have a lot more power in our daily lives than the president does, even though they're the most quote unquote famous person. I'm trying to figure out how can we make our local city council people more famous and get them more noticed on what kind of actions they do or don't take. But it's very simple to vote if you have a mailbox. If you don't have, if you change your address, you could go online and change it very easily. If you're a student here that doesn't always, if you have a Spokane address, you're from Seattle or wherever you're at, you can vote in Spokane and make it the community that you want to stay in. We're seeing a lot of people come to Spokane for school and leave, and that's especially people of color. And that's one of the things that our organization has really been trying to focus on, is retaining students, not just Asian students, but all young students or young people, because this is our world too, and we get to shape it the way we want if we show up. And I know there's a lot of apathy of participating in government, but one of the things that we're focusing on is reimagining Spokane and trying to gain participation and excitement and inspiration for not just young people, but anyone that feels like they have an idea of how our community can be. Like, we're coming into the 50th year anniversary of Expo, which was the first environmentally themed World's Fair that put Spokane on the map and made it what it is today. But we have some of the highest risk health disparities on our Department of Health map. It's a dark purple. It's not a good look for us. And then you look at the ways that our any system, choose parks, housing, roads, education, like, it's not built for success and for thriving. It's built for capitalism and for profit, and it's not for the people. And we want to bring this back to excite people and say, we can do this together, and we can create the Spokane we want. It doesn't have to be the people who've been doing this historically and have taken the lands from this. This started way back from colonization of these lands. The tribes have been taking care of these lands and deserve to be doing it now. And I don't see that happening. How is this 50th year anniversary expo bringing back to light what environmental and racial and social justice should be? Mm. How are we going to move forward and become the community that we need to be to save this planet?
Mm. Some powerful words to end on as we take, we're going to take a real quick break, but yeah, thank you for sharing that and hold on to that thought. We're going to pop off for a really quick break. We'll be right back. Thank you.
It's for the taking, I'ma get me some. I can do no wrong. I can do no wrong. Stopping now, cause I'm due for rest. Been accused of the worst by some blue ribbon best. There's no mystery, no, there's nothing at all. I'm just repeating myself since I wrote Southern Draw.
Shot of Jazz, where we highlight all styles of jazz from the 1890s through the early 1980s, along with stories and anecdotes of the musicians. Join us Wednesdays, 10 a.m. till noon, as we enjoy our musical heritage known as jazz on KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 88.1 and 92.3 FM. It's Federica and Stella with our guest Ryan from the Asians for Collective Liberation Spokane back on the air, continuing our conversation. Before we jump back in the conversation, I have a quick message from our underwriters. So did you hear? Receive support from Stage Left Theater. located at 108 West 3rd Avenue in Spokane. Information at 509-838-9727 and online at stageleftheater.org. All right. So let's just jump right back into it. You know, Ryan, you left us off with some really powerful words about voting and your and civic engagement, some of the civic engagement projects that you're focused on with your organization. And, you know, I wanted to backtrack a little bit because we could go so much deeper into that just alone. But, you know, something that you mentioned kind of caught my attention. You mentioned the issue of language access. And, you know, I'm just curious to dig a little bit deeper into what that means. And it's something that, I mean, for many, like, Native English-speaking Americans, is something we take for granted because, especially in a city like Spokane, where I don't think other, like, speakers of other languages and non-English speakers have a lot of visibility. But, you know, being able to just overcome language barriers, that's such a crucial, important part of any person being able to engage in things like civic, like, be involved in civic engagement and gain access to mental health services and mental health care or health care in general, just living life in general. So, that's kind of like the base foundation that you need to be able to really participate as a full citizen and like being able to really live in a community, to interact with a community. So tell me a little bit about like what kind of language access barriers, you're kind of dealing with and thinking about, and what does that mean? What are language barriers? What is language access, and where are people running into obstacles with that nowadays, and how are you tackling the issue?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So there are, I want to say hundreds, potentially, I'm going to stop at hundreds, say 999. I don't know why I quantified it. There are many Asian languages. There are many Asian dialects. They're not all written. A lot of them are spoken languages. And when we think about what language access means, the question is like, how do we communicate with people? Because then it's like there's Asian, I'm saying Asian sign language. It's probably like Chinese sign language or Korean sign language. There's so many different ways to communicate with our bodies, with our voice, with our faces. And so what we're really talking about is how do we, as an organization, help get resources to people? And this primarily started through the height of COVID when we were trying to get people aware that there's a vaccine. And so we translated our flyers for our vaccine clinic into I don't know, maybe like 5 or 10 different languages, but those were the top languages that we could think of that were either the most spoken in our state or closest to the people in our community that we knew spoke those languages. And that also does not include the people that we don't know that don't speak or that need language assistance. And so there's a lot of, we think very thoughtfully on how we want to portray information to people because we know that people also don't read in their language. A lot of people are illiterate, not just non-English speakers. A lot of English speakers can't read either. A lot of people in the U.S. have like a fifth grade reading level, and that's not very high. Mm. And so in the Asian community, people also can't read in their language. And so if we put out a flyer where our flyers, I think are very impressive. We put like one or two sentences in 5 different languages all in a row so that someone could see one of their languages on there. I think that's really important for people even being noticed. Like, oh, wow, someone can speak my language. Like, what is this? And some people might look at that flyer and be like, I recognize those characters, but I don't know what it says. And so some of the things we've been thinking about are how can we both visually and audibly share information with the community. But then the question is, where does our Asian community or non-English speaking community get their information from? And if we were to do something online, how could we get it to them? And so there's a lot of learning and trial and error that we've been going through to try to get to be as equitable as possible with language. And it's still, I think our dream is to be able to have people on staff. I mean, if I could learn Mandarin to read and write and speak fluently, I feel like I would have made it. Look, Mom, I could do it now. But then there's also not just conversational language, there's business language and vocabulary and health and all these things. So it's a lot. It's not impossible. It's just we're one of the only organizations that I know of in Spokane that is translating materials into Asian languages and trying to get it out there. And what we are interested in having is institutional support to provide those translations. And I think some of the health institutions for sure. And I'll take that back. We're not the only organization that's translating into Asian languages, but like the voting website, I think only is Vietnamese or Mandarin or simplified Chinese. Sorry. There's a bunch of different languages. It's not reaching everyone. And the question is what can we do to reach everyone? Federica, what can we do to reach everyone? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I'm like sitting here, like thinking about it. I mean, God, that's such a hard like thing to tackle.
It is. And if we think about, oh, let's just get a translator. It's like, we need a translator for every language, because unlike most Latine communities that will speak Spanish or something very similar, I speak Spanish better than I took like 3 years in school. I actually, someone on the street approached me and I told them to go look up Latinos in Spokane in Spanish. And I was like, I need to be able to do that in Mandarin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's hard to... you know, it just kind of really brings everything into focus when you think about the fact that, like, somebody who's... It takes time to learn a language. I guess mostly talking about maybe individuals who are newer to the United States or just don't have that high of a level of, like, English language education. Like, you know, I volunteer with RCIS Spokane, and so I'm working with a refugee family helping to tutor English, and it's like every little thing, making a phone call, mm-hmm. filling out a form, that very base level. I think that's one area where like language services in general in Spokane and just kind of everywhere are really lacking.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't it's so much even bigger than that. It's such like a big thing to tackle, but yeah, I don't know what the answer. I don't know what the answer is. I think it's important that we at least, like, you know, shine a light on it. And you know, I think maybe why should like single language speakers, English speakers, why should they? You know, why do you think they should care? People who maybe don't understand the experience from the perspective of someone who doesn't speak English, like why? What would you say to somebody who's just like totally like not plugged in and like why asking like, okay, well, why should I care about this?
That's I'm like, what's something I should say on the radio about this? I mean,
yeah,
that to
it's
me
meant to be a little bit
is
of a prodding question.
Well, it's a bigger question than why is language access important. It's like, why is life important? Why are people in this world important? Why is your existence in this world important? Like, I'm getting really philosophical here, but I think that's I feel like there's a large, just kind of existential crisis that people are facing as individuals, especially with COVID, as feeling very isolated and separated. And the answer is not just, oh, let's just be friends and put our differences aside. It's understanding that there are going to be differences and that they have to be able to exist in the world, and that no matter what the differences are, that they shouldn't be impeding on someone else's lifestyle or a threat or a danger to anyone else. Think whatever you want. Do whatever you want. Do not hurt anyone else or any other life on this planet. Yeah. This world is for everyone, and it should be cherished as such. And the things that do happen here in Spokane do have an impact around the world. Like, we're going to stop talking about globalization in the philosophical sense, but people should care. People should love. And I can't tell you how to do that, but I see a lack of that. And it's not because, I guess one of the things for me is like relearning what love is in a human sense and not in the capitalism sense, because there's been a lot of portrayals of what love looks like from media and from other stories and narratives that have been ingrained in our lifestyles, and that's not what true love is. And I think we're seeing that in our community is what true love is allowing people to exist as they are, to show up as they are, to have space for them, and to help them love themselves. And I'm like, should we start having a mental health session right now? Or am I going into therapy?
I know. I mean, it's all connected. Of course, those things are related to each other. It all comes back to the idea of caring for each other and connection and human well-being, right? So, of course, it makes sense. It all ties back to that. Really, really good thing to kind of leave off and leave the conversation off on. Before we wrap up here, are there any announcements you'd like to make about how people can get involved, learn more about the organization, any upcoming events or current events?
Yes, we are kicking off today at the Downtown Spokane Library until 5 p.m. our Boba Buddies event. Until June 2nd at the library as well, we have our exhibit Expo Revival, Searching for Trent Alley. We have another Boba Breaks at SFCC on May 8th. You could find all of these events on our website at aclspokane.org/Heritage Month. Another cool thing that's coming up is a storytelling workshop and book talk series for the book Rock in My Throat by Cal Kalia Yang and local Pullman artist Jimei Lin. We have a couple of panel talks about the experiences of Asian Muslims and resisting erasure through storytelling. You could follow us on social media at aclspokane.org on Instagram and Facebook. You can also donate to our website, join our movement, and vote with your values. This coming election, in the primary in August and in the general election, and we are going to be having our Get Out the Vote Reimagine Spokane Music Festival October 19th at the Chameleon to excite people to vote and make it a fun party and just make civic engagement fun.
Love it. All right, everybody. This is Ryan, the Executive Director of Asians for Collective Liberation Spokane. You can also find out more by looking up ACLS.
ACL Spokane.
ACLS Spokane.
ACL Spokane.
Oh, ACL. I don't know where I'm getting the... Oh, I see what I'm doing. Reading of Spokane. ACL Spokane. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your story and, talking with us about your organization and everything you're doing. We appreciate your time and appreciate you listeners for tuning into the show. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you have any questions for us, also, Ryan, real quick, is there a way that people who have questions can get in touch with you or someone in the organization?
Yes, you can send us an email at info@aclspokane.org. Find us. We answer our Instagram DMs at aclspokane. And you could find us in the neighborhood. This Saturday, we'll be in this library doing our revival event, and in the downtown Riverfront Park for the expo kickoff. So find us in person, come say hi, and celebrate Heritage Month and the 50th year anniversary of Expo.
All right, wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. And listeners, of course, if you are interested in reaching out to myself and Stella here on the show, you can reach out to us at sodidyouhear@kyrs.org through email. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope you have a wonderful weekend. Thanks again for giving us your time, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you so much.